Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back at you here on a Tuesday, September 23rd, 2025. 9:23:25, coming up on 13 minutes past the hour. First Tuesday in the season of autumn. I do want to let you know, this Thursday, September 25th, the edition of this program, Now with Scott Spears, will be sponsored by the Industrial Channel. It will feature Frank Gibson of Manufacturing Career Connections. It will be a full two-hour program, and you are invited to call in the second hour with questions for Frank about workforce development and business development. That will be this Thursday, September 25th, 8:15 to 10 a.m. Frank Gibson will be the guest, and that is sponsored by the Industrial Channel. Phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. If you have anything to say in regard to possibly last night's city council meeting, which was different, to say the least, or anything else. By the way, you know, Jimmy Kimmel's going back on the air tomorrow night. Tuesday night. So that didn't last very long. When did the suspension come down? Last Wednesday, and now he's back. You know, it just goes to show you that people do not like the FCC pushing people around. You know, I heard Republicans, Democrats, Independents, I think, or even John Husted said something that he felt the strong arm tactics from the FCC were not proper. So it's an interesting time to be in this country. For people who thought Jimmy Kimmel was gone, he is not. He will be back tonight. Only took 6 days. So apparently, it had nothing to do with his sponsors or his ratings or his company. Apparently, it did have more to do with the FCC and business entanglings, which should make people very concerned, to say the least. It'd be good that he's back, but that should make people concerned that it had nothing to do with his ratings or sponsors or so on and so forth. But in any event, that was some big news yesterday. Phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Okay. Well, as we were talking about, last night's city council meeting, little rough, but we made it through. The no-confidence vote in Tommy Reese did not happen, so he maintains that. 3 months left to go in his tenure. It was just not a pleasant meeting. Let's put it that way. It was a bit of an ugly meeting last night with council members and things being said. You can definitely tell that there is some personal animosity between some of these council members that is very well drifting over into the meetings. Now, where does that all go on the whole? I have no idea. And you know what? I still have not heard the argument in a council meeting as why there is no confidence in Tommy Reese. That's a very interesting thing. I mean, this man is at the very end of his term. So why now a no-confidence vote, and why is this so pertinent? Because, you know, I was thinking last night, okay, if this is all about him not wanting to sign this paperwork to release the money to start work on the new fire station, to get some drawings done and, you know, plans, so on and so forth, If that was what it was about, him refusing to do that, I don't know that is, why is that a no-confidence vote, I guess is my question. Because don't you want your fiscal officers to do things that they feel are in the best interest of the city? I mean, isn't that why they're elected? To try to do what's best for the city? I don't know. It was just an odd moment to me. If a fiscal officer believes, after counsel with the law director and counsel with a law firm, that he should not be doing something, and he says, I'm not going to do it, why is that no confidence? Now, you might not like that he's not going to sign the paperwork, but why is that a vote of no confidence? I guess I don't understand. And I don't understand if they were going to switch it to the auditor, which they did last night, switch the idea of signing this paperwork to the auditor, then why did it matter? Why did it matter if Tommy signed it or not? Did anybody go to him and ask him if he was going to sign the paperwork? What happened? I don't know. It's a very odd situation, and it's very hard to even describe. But there does seem to be a certain group that just does not want Tommy Rees there. But it looks as if he's going to remain through the next 3 months. So that's the way that goes. But we've got to find a way to talk to people. I politics, there's a lot of debate. There's a lot of discussion. People get very passionate about that. I'm not denying that. But at some point, when you're talking to people in a way that is so angry, you're not going to get anything out of that person. They're not going to like you, you're not going to like them, and you're not going to want to do anything for that person. And that's a problem when the head of the finance chair and the treasurer and the auditor have that kind of relationship. Because if it's frustration, then who's going to work together to get anything done? And isn't that why all of these people are here? I mean, isn't the finance chair a city council person that's elected? Isn't the treasurer somebody who's elected? Isn't the auditor somebody who's elected? You know, the people send these people to these positions, and what happens? Try to get along. Try to get the job done. What is the job at this point of any of these people? You know, can anybody explain that? What's the job? If you work with somebody in any kind of work setting and you don't get along with them and you don't believe they're doing their job, don't you still have to try to work with them to get that job done? Maybe just a thought. 740-383-9944. If you have anything you'd like to say, give me a buzz. 740-383-9944. I just know when a child has to be sent out of a room because the conversation is getting that difficult, that there seems to be something wrong with the conversation, I would think. Well, maybe on a lighter note, we covered the River Valley Heart. Well, let's take the phone call, then we'll come back to this. Interesting conversation, to be sure. Go ahead, caller.
What you just said made me think of an analogy in my head in the real world, a real world scenario. Let's say we've got a Kroger store, and let's say that there's someone that works over in the produce department, and the front end does not like how he stacks his produce. And produce department, okay, fine. He's really kind of his own boss over there, and he doesn't have to answer to the front end. So the front end just gets a little petition and passes it around amongst themselves and takes it over there to the produce person and says, here, we don't have any confidence that you know how to do your job. It's kind of what this seems like. It's retaliation.
What's interesting that you bring that up is that, you know, normally...
I got in trouble.
Well, I can believe that would happen. But, you know, what's interesting about that analogy is that what happens in the real world in a situation like that
is... You have to get along.
Well, yes, but there is a manager somewhere that is going
to the devil.
Well, that's going to step in and say, listen, I agree or I disagree, but regardless, we've got to get along here, and we've got to get this done. Now, they might say, don't do that anymore, but we've got to get along, and when you talk to this person, you cannot talk to them like that. So, what I don't understand, it's not Mary. She's there to gavel, but she's not there to sort out those problems as the president of council. Who is the person at City Hall who is in charge, who can go to the treasurer and go to the, because I'm tired of hearing this, I'm going to meet with this person, they don't show up, blah, blah, blah. Well, somebody who's full-time in that building needs to call a meeting of these people and say, you know, we're looking like fools in front of the public. What do we need to fix here? Now, who is that person?
I think they look like fools, though.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I think that who is there? I mean, is that the mayor who does that? Is that the service director who does that? I mean, who is running City Hall? Who runs this city?
Well, from what I heard in the parking lot last night, it's Collins.
Okay. Now, listen. Bill Collins has been given a lot of credit for a lot of things, and he's also been rapped for a lot of things. But, Bill, I know you listen, and I appreciate that. But, Bill, why don't you call these people in your office and say, how can we make this work?
A nice conference room where we put thousands of dollars worth of reps. Take them in there.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, isn't that what should be done? And shouldn't it be, listen, I don't agree with either one of you. I think you've both been acting bad here. But let's try to get this together for the next 3 months. Let's try to fix some things.
What if one of them is doing his bidding?
Well, then we got a problem. I don't know.
Is he going to take them both in there and say, hey, let's have us a little granola bar and some orange juice and let's chit-chat and work through this? Or is he going to continue to let his lapdog destroy the local government? Because, I mean, they've ran Trina out. They've ran Jason out. They've ran Ayers out. It's all the council that they want now. I don't know. Victor might be, he might be a little wild card.
Well, I saw Scott Kreider there last night. You never know what's going to happen there. So Al Prater is another one who did not vote. He voted to strike out the language last night, and he also voted to send that back to committee, so he did not vote for the no confidence vote. And he did ask a question at one point that I thought was very favorable to Tommy Rees, so I can't say that Prater is in on any of this.
I think Prater's nice, and I don't think he wants to be mean. I don't think he's a mean boy.
So you take Prater, you take Ralph Smith, you take Thaddeus Smith.
I think Ralph Smith is still part of the mean boy club.
But last night?
The conversation in the parking lot was had last night that when someone is being that blatantly disrespectful to another human being, it's really kind of hard to rally behind him afterwards.
Well, if Rob Smith, he's right then. I mean, I think that's right, isn't it?
Well, yeah. But he's traipsed up to Tommy's office with Twyla before and was, he one of the people that put the no confidence on there? I know it was Twyla and Barr, but I don't remember
but
who the person was.
Well, I think it was Ayers, wasn't it?
Okay, it might have been. There were two there that, the new ones, and I couldn't keep all the names straight of what got added.
But wasn't it interesting that Ralph Smith, as you said, who is the one who goes with Twyla to these meetings with Tommy Rees that are supposed to be had?
As her witness.
Right, but even he voted to strike the language out that said Tommy Rees wouldn't refuse to do this, and he also voted to send the no confidence vote back to committee.
Well, he did. He was the one that insisted that the language be stricken about the mayor back when the Love Your City stuff was going on.
Well, he's consistent then.
Well, yeah, he didn't want to hurt any feelings then, and apparently he didn't want to hurt any feelings last night, so we will give him an A for consistency.
Right, and didn't, I mean, I'm trying to remember now, but
Thad said no.
Thad said no. Dictal said no.
Back in the day, back when the stuff with Collins was going on, Thad said no because he didn't think things like that should be in the permanent minutes of the city of Marion and make our city look bad. So
right,
Wolf is bad, and A for consistency there.
Dichtel said no. And Prater said no.
Well, Dichtel asked the questions like, is it just that he's asking questions you and I are asking? Is it just this one thing, or, you know, are there more detailed things? What's going to happen? Like, this is just laid at his plate.
Well, and Schauber said no.
But I think Dichtel's going to be responsible and research, and clearly he's reading the minutes because he's getting all the corrections. But, yeah, and Schauber said no, but I think we knew that.
And I think Rollins was a split on some of this. I can't remember. Didn't Rollins vote yes to get rid of the language, but no?
He wanted to get rid of the mean part, but he still wanted to go ahead and pass it.
Yeah, the no confidence vote.
Right.
But wasn't Barr also, he wasn't consistent on both of those. I think he voted to get rid of the language, but I think he voted, didn't he vote?
I mean, at that point, if you didn't vote to get rid of the language, didn't you just kind of look like a total jerk?
Well, he's the first person to vote, and some people did. I don't think that Ayers voted yes. Now, I could be wrong on that. I'm trying to remember. I don't know if Ayers voted
that's
yes.
That's how confusing it was. For the people that are listening, we were there, and it was just
yeah, but you know what?
We're not exactly sure what happened.
But you know what? I like that it's this confusing for this reason. Because for people who say these people vote party lines, that did not happen last night. When I actually have to think back of who voted for what, that's good. Because that means it's not a party
line. Now listen, you say party lines. There's only one person up there that's not a Republican. What you're talking about is block voting. No, they did not block vote last night.
Right. So I actually have to think about who voted for what and why. Well, I mean, you've got some different things. I mean, you've got Ayers, who's a Democrat. You've got Jason, who is not in the good graces of the Republicans. You've got Aaron, who is a Republican but says he's an independent. So, I mean, I have to think about all their votes. Now, I know Jason was consistent on both of those, but I don't think Rollins or Ayers was. And I also don't think that I think that Thad was. I think that Rob Smith was. I think that Prater was. I think that Dichtel was. But I Sean Barr might have been. And I'm sure Twyla wasn't. So I don't know. You know, so whatever this cabal or block voting, well, it certainly didn't happen last night. I think people were making their own decisions as it went down the line.
I believe that I'd have to go back and listen. So just be speculation. I think Barr did the same thing that Ayers did, voted to remove the mean language, but still wanted to pass it. There just wasn't enough people that wanted to pass it,
so then Rollins didn't vote to pass it?
Oh, goodness, though, because remember, there was votes to amend it, and then there was votes to suspend the rules, and then there were votes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The interesting thing, if you go back to the amendment to take out the language that said Tommy Reese refused to do it, nobody knew that amendment was going to be presented, so they had to make up their mind based on what was said.
Well, the people that added it to the agenda knew that it was going to be, which were Twyla and Sean.
No, I'm just saying the amendment
right,
to take it out.
The other ones did not, no. They've
right, the amendment, and the majority of them, like 90% of them, voted to take it out. So, you know, you have, and also voted against the no confidence vote. So I've got to believe that somewhere these people don't believe it, which comes back to the original point. What has Tommy Reese done that makes him, isn't this what you want the treasurer to do? Do your research, call a lawyer.
Diligence, I believe is what it's called.
Yeah, I mean, and just, hey, you know what? I don't think I should sign this because I'm not sure that the money's there. What do you want him to do? Not sure the money's there and sign it?
Exactly. And then here's another thing that I was thinking. He's gone in like 2 months. Why would, even I, as I don't know, as an investor or whatever, you're leaving the job in 2 months, and he's a public official, so he's responsible to the public. you're leaving the job in 2 months, I certainly wouldn't want to sign a piece of paper to say that I know what the financial position of the city is going to be whenever this project is complete and that you're going to get your money.
Well, and I also...
If it goes on for a year, we might not have money in a year to pay you, especially if after we pay for our expensive city charter.
Well, all I know is that I keep waiting to hear what the argument is against Tommy Reese not doing his job, and I have yet to hear a good argument on that.
Specifics, but that's what I was going to tell him. You don't go passing that bill with just a bunch of slander and libel and generalizations in there, because Mr. Reese, I know a good attorney, and he can tear that to pieces. Don't pass a piece of legislation just to slander and libel somebody. That's just so, like, we don't have enough other problems going on. They sat up there for 50 minutes about and argued about Tommy Reese last night, and he's going to be gone in a couple months.
Well, you know what?
And we're still not going to have an audited book to know how much money we've got.
But this comes back to the whole Charter City thing. Okay, and here is why there is a problem. When you start thinking you're smarter than the people, because you must think, see, here's the problem. If my argument is the reason we need a charter city, we've got to take this out of the hands of the voters.
You know, Terry could have just went in that finance director's office and told him, sign this, or we'll just find a new finance director.
Well, but I guess what I'm confused about the charter city, if the sentiment is the literally, this is what's being said. The Marion voters aren't smart enough, or we have a lack of candidates, that we cannot fill these positions anymore. Okay, well, near as I can tell, this video woman who's going to be the next treasurer is very well qualified. So where did she come from? You know, we can't get good candidates. Okay, well, we got one. Okay, so... What
in that office, I feel it's going to be, I mean, I don't know the woman, based on her background, I believe that office is going to be in good hands.
Yeah, but what is the Charter City idea then? We know better as elected officials, because the person picking these people will be council people or the mayor, however that's written. So, we know better than all of you, but we're elected ourselves.
So, yes, the people that sit up there and scream at each other and call each other names and wave their fingers in each other's faces and encroach on each other's personal space, they know better than we do about picking the officials for the city. Now, the people that have been in charge for the last 2 years all are heavily connected to who is running, mostly who is running for the charter. Because, you've got Sean Barr, his daughter's running. Lila Lang, her grandson, is running. We've got Mark Russell, who's actually the law director, who's been nothing in his entire adult life except for an assistant, as an attorney. He's been an assistant law director and the law director for 32 years. He started as the assistant law director when I was in the 8th grade. He started as the law director when I was in the 10th grade. And I've been out of school for a couple of years now.
But don't you think it's a little...
We got Jay McDonald, lifetime government employee. He's retiring next year. What do you think he's going to put in that city charter? It's going to do? It's going to protect his buddies downstairs in the bottom. You know, we got all these city employees that have been city employees for decades, as we've all watched this place decline for decades, and now they want to write the Constitution to go ahead and solidify their spots in Marion history and make sure the people behind them can get to continue to critique.
But what I don't understand is a lot of the people who are critiquing people like Tommy Reese and Miranda as not knowing their job, what I don't get is that Robert Landon, and I give him credit for this, sat on this program and said, I was not qualified for that position.
Who up there is going to figure out who's qualified for the newly designed office of finance director?
Right.
Because not one. I am the next to Russell. When I'm in that room, I'm the second highest educated person in that room. One of my degrees happens to be in accounting. Those buffoons up there don't even know how to read the budget. How the hell are they going to pick who's the next finance director?
Yeah, but how can you you know, with Robert Landon being on the charter committee, how can you align yourself with that if, and I'm not saying that he shouldn't be on the charter committee, anything is allowed, but how can you align yourself with that when you're saying these people are not competent?
Yeah, he didn't.
Out of Robert Landon's own mouth, he said he wasn't qualified.
He can admit that he's not qualified, but I certainly can tell you who the next person that will be qualified. It's shameful. It's just, it's going to be hilarious if the charter thing does happen and he's on the charter commission, and then all these audits start rolling out where he's costing us hundreds of thousands of dollars, and there he is right in the city government. Well, that's just going to be ironic beyond belief.
Well, we'll
not
see.
In a good way.
We'll see.
Take care,
Scott. Thank you. Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. And I just want to make it clear again, you know, Robert admitted that on this show, that he was not qualified for that position. That's good on his part. But I don't quite understand how some people who are knocking Tommy Reese and knocking Morant, is it just because they're in the job now? Is that the reason? I guess I'm not sure how this is all trickling out as time goes along. In any event, the phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. Always good to hear from the listening audience. Well, as I said last Friday, I don't think we got a chance to talk about this yesterday. We did cover the Friday night football game, the big rivalry game with Harding and River Valley. Harding did win. I think it's been quite a while since Harding defeated River Valley in that rivalry game, and they led the entire game. River Valley never got the lead in that game. I don't know what's going on with River Valley's football team. I had a lot of fun up there on Friday night, being in the press box. It was fun to go to the game. A little warm, but it was a lot of fun. But I don't know what's going on with River Valley. I was tipped off early in the game, or actually before the game started, that River Valley's quarterback had not been quarterback since junior high, and apparently threw a lot of interceptions. And that certainly proved out to be true in that game, because the interception certainly helped Harding. And there was a point in that game in which River Valley actually caught an interception, but then they fumbled the ball on the next play. That was very bizarre. But I'll tell you something about that game. For it being a rivalry game and there being a lot of people there, there was not much energy at that game. It was odd. The Lima Senior game, which is the other game that we covered, had a lot of enthusiasm. Maybe it was because it was the home opener at Harding. But that game on Friday night, I don't know, for a rivalry game, it was kind of really subdued. There was not a big, exciting feel there on Friday night. And I'm not sure what that was. I don't think it had anything to do with anybody in particular. But there was not much of an exciting feel. Did anybody listen to that game Friday night? You got any thoughts on that? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. The fact that Harding was able to win, or River Valley, did you listen to our broadcast? Did you enjoy it? I don't know. Give us a buzz. 740-383-9944. It was an interesting night, to be sure. I enjoyed it. It was fun. But I'll tell you, the press box was a little cramped. And that's no knock on Harding. They've only got so much space. But it seemed like everybody and their uncle wanted to cover that game. And I'm trying to think of how many people we had up in that press box. But we had at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 maybe. 5 different groups covering that game. And I'll tell you, when you get 5 different groups in a press box like that on a warm night, there is not much space for anybody. And that makes for a little bit of a complicated situation. You know, I didn't mind where we were sitting. It was just a little too cramped in the old press box. But if you got anything to say, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. And I'll tell you, if you listen to the broadcast, there was a moment And I'll tell you what happened. Where I thought, gee whiz, you know, I could be any other place in the world right now but up in this press box. Here's what happened. And you know, I'm not going to name anybody or anything of that nature. But at one point, somebody got up. And this person had maybe a broken foot or a twisted ankle. I'm not sure. But they had crutches. And they were up in the press box. And they had crutches. And for some reason, they decided that they were going to walk through the press box with a bad ankle or foot or whatever they had without their crutches. So they stood up on one leg and they were trying to hop around. And they tried to go behind where we were sitting while we were doing the game. And the person, because there's not a whole lot of room in that press box, and because they didn't have crutches, and they were trying to move kind of fast, fell into us as we were doing the broadcast. And I'll tell you, you know, I didn't see it coming, so it was kind of, you know, it's just one of those things where maybe have a little more personal space. I don't know. Or use the crutches or something. Or, hey, you know, excuse me, can I get through? That sort of thing. But, you know, when somebody falls into you like that, it's a, and you don't see it coming because it's coming from behind, it was a little odd, to say the least. That was one of those things that I don't ever remember happening during a football game. But if you would have listened to the broadcast, you would have known when it happened. Because it was a little strange. And you know what? People trip and fall. I've tripped and fell in my life. But when they fall into you, when you're doing a game, and the person has already got a bad foot, you would expect to move around a little more gingerly, I guess. I don't know. Just an odd moment. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. If anybody's got anything to say about the football game or the city council meeting, both of those things are certainly on the table here today, and we would love to hear from you on either one of these subjects. Well, is there anything of interest going on in Marion at this point beyond the things that we've already discussed? Is there anything on anybody's mind? As I said, the national news has pretty well turned to the fact that Jimmy Kimmel will be coming back tomorrow night. Go ahead, caller.
Boy, you're getting pretty fresh now, saying you love to hear from us.
Oh, I do love to hear from you.
Oh, well, I got a couple of them, and they refer back to Friday.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, they refer back to the... I still... love to know exactly what took place at the Brown Jug. And I understood that the one announcer, he told you prior to that, when you talked to him a day or so prior to that, he's going to add a little tease for you, and you got there. But I didn't think that broadcast of you and there at the Brown Jug turned out the way you wanted it to. Did it or didn't it, Scott?
As far as quality?
Language.
Oh, language.
There you are, and I listened to you from the start, 5:15, you said, clear up until the end.
Right.
And you talked to everything, just the, you and Matt and...
Mary Ellen?
Mary Ellen, all the names I'm trying to figure out here, three of you, and you had a string of all kinds of conversation except horse racing. So that was one peculiar thing. Was you stuck in there, or prior to other times you was down there, I can't remember because I don't dwell on that, but some of the things that I didn't understand, it didn't seem like, was you, Mary Ellen, up in the press box prior to this last announcement and stuff, weren't you up there when the race was going on or right close to the press box or something?
No, not this year, no.
I said, not pertaining to this.
Oh, 2 years ago, yes.
Yes, you were.
Yep.
Now, how many years have you been up in the press box with that announcer at the horse races?
Just that 1 year, 2 years ago.
Okay, so you only had 2 years of being down there with microphones with the brown jug, right?
4 years.
4 years with a microphone?
Yeah, we started doing that in 22.
And was you up in the press box then, or after the race was over with interviewing?
We've done that every year. The only year we went to the press box, I think, was 23.
Okay. So, 23, and this is 25, so...
Yeah, 2 years ago.
2 years ago. So, I just thought you got shunned out of the press box at the Brown Jug. Did you or didn't you not? They didn't allow you up there this year. Or what was the real, truthful wording you can say that you wasn't up in the press box this year at all?
Or didn't ask to go up to the press box. We didn't have a question. We didn't have a permit in to go to the press box. The year we went up there was fine, and I'm sure we could have gone up there this year, but nobody broadcast. See, the way they have that set up, for people who've not been there or have not been over to the press box, nobody broadcasts from the press. It's a weird press box. It's called the Roger Houston press box. And the only person up in that press box is Roger and one other person. And they're not broadcasting over the airwaves anywhere. They're just broadcasting on the PA that goes around the stadium.
Okay.
I'm not even sure that you could broadcast out of there, because I'm not sure if they have the equipment to do it. It's a very small area, and I don't even think they have hookups to do live broadcasts.
So you don't have a hookup for, technically, wires or anything. You can broadcast any place you go, and you interview people up at the meetings and stuff here in Marion and everything like that. You don't have any cords, so you don't have any equipment. Could you have done it down there if you was up in the press box?
I don't think so. I mean, because on Friday in the football game, we used the same equipment at the jug because we ran three microphones.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
We're talking about, yeah.
Yeah. So when you have three microphones, and we did have a soundboard, and we did have a computer, I don't think there's a setup for that in the Brown Jug press box.
Other than Governor DeWine being there and the highlighting of that, was that pronounced? Did you go and ask him to come over and see you folks, or was that on his own schedule or invite from you? Would you please come over and see Mary Ellen and I at the Brown Jug? Or how did that, was that on his own agenda and stuff, he come over to see you, or just
that,
a coincidental thing?
No, that came from him about an hour before we went on, and I wasn't even sure he was still coming or what time it was going to be. We got a message.
He didn't get an invite from you to come over if he could spare his time.
No, I did not talk to the governor.
Okay, so it went off that way. Okay, because I thought, boy, for you guys announcing the Brown Jug, there wasn't hardly anything. I wouldn't even know just down there was politics and there was this and that all discussed. And it seemed like you was just stuck in a log cabin or something there that you just was waiting till the whole thing was over with. And then we didn't get very good pronounced information who won and this, that, and trifecta and all that kind of stuff. I thought, I was listening for that. I was kind of interested. I'm no gambler or nothing on horse racing or like that, but I thought, boy, you guys are going to be right there, and this is the second or third year there that you're going to have all that information. So that's fine with me. I won't have to go into detail or nothing.
It's every year, all 4 years that we've been there, we've always been in the log cabin. So I knew that this year that's what it was going to be. And the reason that we don't call the races in that way is because, I'm not really sure that I'm there more for the interviews. And if we had done that, I don't think we could have had the governor on. I don't, because he doesn't go up in the press box.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And Roger could not talk to us if we were in the press box because he's calling the races. So it's just a difficult. The first year I went down there, I realized that the best place to do a broadcast here is going to be in the log cabin, because any other place you go, you're going to be bombarded with basically horse racing, and you can't. It would just be what you hear if you're there.
Okay. Well, anyhow, go back to Friday night then. I knew there was something a little wrong there. Now, this is just me listening over the air and knowing what's going on previous years and blah, blah, blah. I don't get it all together, but I listen very closely to everything that you're with and all the other people that call in. I find it interesting to Carol and I both that listen to it. So anyhow, I have no favorites or nothing like that as far as any of your shows you broadcast. I listen to everything I do, because then I just go on about my day and have a good day. But I know you've had difficulty in that press box up there prior with football. And I just thought, well, maybe did they seal you guys off? Because I didn't hear much lingo in between you and Matt. You'd done a good job on the football broadcasting. You'd done all right there. But the enthusiasm from both of you wasn't really great. It's kind of I can't.
Remember. Oh, you're right. It was absolutely subdued. But the press box was fine. I mean, in that particular situation, everybody was in there. Nobody said anything. Everything was fine.
You admitted that you and someone else that was in there with you talking a little loud, and they didn't like that. And I could hear override from the Harding announcers and the press box announcers and the radio announcers intertwined previous times he was up there in the press box. But this year, it seemed like it got sealed off pretty good.
Well, no, that's, I think, because we had a better position. They gave us a better position for this game, which is why I thought it was odd that the enthusiasm was down. But everywhere I went that night, when I would leave the press box, there was not much enthusiasm in the stands, and I think that's what gets you up, is when the crowd is into the game. And it just was not, and I don't know why, because Harding did win the game. And
I didn't hear the national anthem or anything there at the game, and the beginning of the game. Same day down to Brown Jug, I didn't hear the what is the proper name of the horn at the horse races when they rattle that off? That really puts the spark into thing. Everybody pays attention. Here's going to go to the big race. What's the name of that horn? Is that a
bugle, I think. Isn't it a bugle?
Huh?
A bugle? Isn't it a bugle?
That's what I was wondering about. I didn't know if it was a reed instrument or if it was a air instrument that they do that. But yeah, that's a really the trill. I didn't hear that on your broadcast coming by, and it seemed like I never heard anything on the loudspeaker outdoor type of thing, knowing you're even at a Brown Jug.
No, we were inside. We were in the log cabin.
Yeah, it was pretty kind of secluded, just you, Mary Ellen, and Matt there, and it didn't seem like the vibes from the crowd and stuff was really there at a horse race.
Well, and I'll tell you, and we talked about it that day, and I think any of them would say this, that was an odd day too, because usually the Jug falling in the middle of September is not a, it's cooler outside, it's starting to get cool, and people are a little more free to get around, and it was so hot that day that people were really, they would walk through the log cabin, and they were just, they just seemed, they were sweating profusely. Yeah. They had these tents set up, which I'd never seen before, where they were trying to stay away from the sun.
I said that to you there on TV. I saw that. I wouldn't have known anything about that. But I've got good a friend down there, and I talked to her. She's about 97, and she said, Teddy, she said the Brown Jug was kind of flat. It wasn't.
It was.
But she told me there just yesterday, I talked to her on the phone, and she's lived down in Delaware all her life and tends a lot of stuff. But she said everything, they only was a little bit of fireworks or something like that, and it was over with or something like that. And there just wasn't the vibes in that at the little Brown Jug as previous years.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. But okay. I will say that because of the governor showing up and being Rogers last year, I did like the broadcast itself, and I think people liked hearing the governor because I have not had him on in a while.
Well, your broadcast, yes, but we'll get back to the jug broadcast. You didn't hear none of that either, did you?
There's a television in there, so I heard the television.
Okay, so the real true vibes of the brown jug wasn't really absorbed by any of the trio of you there, right?
No, we weren't outside, no.
Yeah, okay. I was just wondering, and I was just going back to the ball game. I thought maybe they'd got some contractors' plastic and they just... Just joking, Scott. Yeah. But I thought maybe they partitioned that thing up there so there wouldn't be no conflict. But you were lucky. The guy with the crutches, he left them alone over there, or you'd have got clobbered in the head and stuff, maybe knocked out on your...
I would have. And, you know, that I'm still not even sure who that guy was with. I don't know where... There were about five different people, at least five, that were broadcasting, which you would have thought that would have made it more exciting. But everybody that night, and maybe it was the heat, maybe it was the same thing that was going on at the Brown Jug. It just, I looked out the door. We were sitting right next to one of the doors, and I kept looking out there, and the fans were not getting on their feet. The fans were not cheering. The fans, there were a couple times it happened, but for a rivalry game and for the fact that Harding was winning, it was an odd atmosphere.
It must have caught fire and went down to Delaware also, didn't it?
Oh, I think it did. I think it did.
Carol and I have been good friends with for years. She said it was kind of dead around Delaware. Well, I'll let you go, Scott. I just thought I'd put that. And the clarification is good with me, but, I'll tell you, down there at that Kentucky Derby, buddy, weather prevails and the people are the same. And the women with the beautiful hats are still as beautiful as can be.
People love the hats.
Both the hats and the women, yeah, boy. And
There were some good-looking women at the Little Brown Jug. Now, you can't take away from that.
Oh, you didn't send Matt over to get any good-look women and bring him up into the... Oh, okay.
Well, I didn't say that. I just didn't put him on the air.
Well, when you went to any of the Buttworth Festival in there, you always had him be the retriever and go over and bring him back to you, you know. But that didn't prevail down there. Just having a little fun with you.
No problem.
Okay, buddy.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. Well, that was fun. It definitely, Friday night's football game, I'm glad Harding won, but the mood was definitely a little different there that entire night. Maybe it was the heat. I don't know. And the jug broadcast was just fun because of, I think, the guests that we had. But no, we did not call horse racing at the Little Brown Jug. But we are done here for today. I'll be back tomorrow morning and we'll continue the conversation. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
and then just
I just made up that answer.
And then onward and upward. I like
you always a little bit missed, of course.